Here we are in the Resurrection Easter Seminar on campus, Lecture 3. Resurrection. I view the past and the present as dead. The allness can only know the present. To be dead is not to have lived or not to have existed. We're going to speak a little bit about the tunnel, and about the light, and about the experience that we all have in our awareness of our absolute allness. When we think of who we are, and we think of where we're going, and we think of what we're doing, what sort of things do we think about? What sort of ideas come to our mind? What sort of aspects come to us when we think about the resurrection and we think about living in the allness and being and is living in the allness? Sort of a undesirable condition for a human being, because a human being thinks, no, that just isn't all that cool. Why be invisible? Why be nothing? Why be all? Because when you're all, you're not any one little individual thing. Well, when the Buddha went to the Bo tree and meditated, he sat under the Bo tree for a considerable time, and in the process, he had a deep introspective awareness of himself. He listened to his divine within, and his divine within gave him an experience that I would like all of us to know, consciously to know. But of course, you can only know the beginning of it. The experience that came to the Buddha was an ever-increasing light awareness, the illumination of who and what he is. Now, he had been many things in his life, not many things, but several. He was the son of a king. He was heir to a kingdom. He was a father. He was a husband. And he was also a prince. And he also was a mendicant monk going around begging for food. He also deeply limited his body and made himself into just skin and bones and flagellated himself looking for that inward light. And then when he sat under the tree, alone, obviously, he didn't sit with his companions, they were somewhere else. And he sat alone. And as he listened, a certain warmth welled up in his heart, in his being. And as this warmth welled up in his heart and in his being, which happens in every person who really gives himself over 100% to the divine within. As this warmth welled up in his being, he felt an inner sense of peace first. He felt there was really nothing to do in the world. There was nothing more for him to chase after, nothing more for him to wander after, looking for his spiritual awareness. And then a light began to blossom in his beingness. And it became brighter and brighter and brighter. And though he may have had his eyes closed or his eyes were open, it didn't matter. The light was so bright, just like with Paul on the road to Damascus. The light struck him so brightly. There was this inner awareness saying, "Listen to me now. You've been asking for it, now listen to me now." And so, Saul listened, the Buddha, Siddhartha listened, and as Siddhartha listened and saw the light overcame him, and the light said to him what he wanted to hear. It said, "You may stay in the light forever, and live in this eternal state of bliss, this eternal state of paradise, this eternal state of nirvana. Or you may go back to the world and share with the world how the light touched you and what the light said to you. Well, he decided to go back to the world and tell the world what the light said to him. Paul, Saul, decided to go back to the world too and tell the world what it said. Because in Saul's vision, the vision said to him, Saul, you can have everything. You can have bliss, you can have peace, you can have the majesty that you've always wanted, that oneness within your soul. But we are told, he was told, Paul, or Saul, why dost thou persecute me? Can you imagine Jesus, a consciousness, coming to Saul and saying to him, why are you on my back? You know? In the first place, if he were, Jesus knew it. And it didn't matter to Jesus because he created those situations as part of the program he had established for himself. Well, so this light illumined Saul and made him aware that there was something greater in life than that. And he went out and he did a wonderful work. And in the process of doing the work, he forgot the light many times. And when he forgot the light, then he started telling people how to behave. When he remembered the light, he lived as the light. 1 Corinthians 13, many others, beautiful writings that Paul did. But when he forgot, then he was an old battle axe. He was an old Moses going around telling the people how to behave. The Buddha had a little bit of the same aspect about him. He was going around telling the world that he was doing his own thing and having fun. And that part was great. The light illumined him to show him that he, as an individual, was an important person. And he did not have to flagellate himself. He did not have to deny himself. He did not have to seek after anything outside of himself, that it all was within. And he taught this for many years in his simple, beautiful way. But then society came to him and said, well, what about death? And what about unhappiness and disease and misfortune? What about all of these things that plague mankind? And so the Buddha allowed himself to be involved in that. And that was unfortunate, because that was not what he taught. The Buddha taught listening to the divine within and following the light wherever it might lead you. Perhaps that's where it led him. Obviously, that's what he did for a time. In you now, this Easter time, in you, the Christ in you is speaking to you. And it's saying to you, why don't you get with it? Why don't you follow your inner illumination? And you know, every one of us is afraid to follow that inner illumination. And the reason that we're afraid to follow that inner illumination is that all of the things that we hold dear will no longer be available to us. Not that it's not available, we'll have no interest in it. We'll have no interest in the world. We'll have no interest in the playground on which humans are playing, in which they make their games. As I speak in many of my talks three times a day, I say how if humans were just to say, I'm going to listen to the divine within, and I'm going to live like the light of the divine within, and I'm going to go to the peace tables, and I'm going to go to the war tables, and I'm going to go to all of the conferences and all the places, but you can't get in there because you haven't got priorities. Hey, if you want to go there, you can go there. You go there in consciousness. You have your mental attitude there, your consciousness there, and you can be at the most secret, sacred, forbidden meetings in the world if you choose, and you can bring to that meeting your desire for peace, your desire for harmony, your awareness of peace and harmony and love for all at the table. This is not unusual, and there are many people who are doing it. However, the people who are doing it usually have an axe to grind. And because they have an axe to grind for their particular country, let's save America, let's save Japan, let's save Germany, let's save these nations. And, of course, that's not the point. Because, you see, Europe is going through a bit of an attitude on this right now. What does it mean to be the Euro? The Euro is a united Europe. It is a united European community of people in the European area working harmoniously together, having each of these countries, which for so long had been destitute of abundance and success, and now as they have joined the Euro, as they have become part of this society for the benefit of all European communities, their income has increased immeasurably. Their success as a nation has become greater and greater. They have done things that they had never done before or even dreamed of doing. Now, we should have the United States of Europe, the United States of the world, and that's not true. We should have a united world. Each country in the world being its joyful self, but united harmoniously at one giant, not peace table, but at one giant table of entrepreneurship in which every country is interested in doing its highest and doing its best. Now you see, this is what comes when you begin to listen to the light of the divine within you. And as you begin to listen to the light of the divine within you, what happens? I have friends, Elgin Ambrose Worrell, and they believed that they could do great healings at a distance. They would speak their word, and Ambrose would lie on his bed, and he would send vibrations from his solar plexus to the individual desiring healing, and then they would phone that person in some other part of the country or the world, and at that very moment they would be feeling this healing measure and would be healed, which is quite remarkable. I'm saying this to you, not that we should practice that, but I'm saying this to you to show you that we have the ability to be in many places at once, to have our vibrations of wholeness, our vibrations of oneness be everywhere. So this is part of the message of Jesus. This is part of the resurrection procedure, the resurrecting our attitude from the idea that there is in this world limitation, to the idea that in this world there is only abundance. We are resurrecting our thought that in this world there is only harmony and peace and love among all human beings, because we have the ability. Now, when you individually are looking to find your spiritual beingness, when you individually are looking to find your spiritual oneness, quite likely, having the training of the University of Healing, you will not seek to be a helper. You will not seek to be a person who goes out and changes the world. You will not seek to be a person who goes out and helps others in any way. What you will do as you are aware of your inner light at its most powerful. What you will do will be to think your thought, and it will be accomplished. You will think your thought not for your desire, but you will say, the ideal Earth is now everywhere. The ideal planet Earth now exists. Would you say the concept of paradise for the Garden of Eden had been a very pleasant place? Yeah, not bad. Okay. Can you conceive that the concept Earth by a master would be a very pleasant place? Would be a place filled with all sorts of beautiful things that would really be quite nice. Now, do you still want the ride on the toboggan or the ride down the amusement park, zoom, zoom, spinning around? You still need the outer excitement. You see, if you still need that outer excitement, you will not pursue your inner awareness. Because the moment you pursue your inner awareness, you pursue bliss. You pursue peace. You pursue harmony, love, joy. You pursue all of those things that doesn't need excitement. Enthusiasm and joy and what have you. Excitement, no. Excitement is something outside generated. It's something that is generated by the physical body to please the physical body or to whatever it's going to do to the physical body. But the inner excitement is more magnificent than anything you can ever imagine. Consider the inner imagination, the inner magic of who you are as you are working on your life and your project. Consider that. Consider who you are as you are considering your divine self. Consider it. Who are you as you are working on your divine self? Are you a human being or are you a divine being? If you are a divine being, what is it that you are using as your power? What is it that you're using as your focal point for accomplishing your goals? And what you're using, you're using light. And this is what the resurrection teaches us. It teaches us light. Now, medical science is going through a phase. It's coming up. In the next few years, we'll see more and more of this. But the medical profession is coming through a phase which will be using light for surgery, light for medicine, light for healing. Laser is a light in a way, but laser is an idea of, I don't like to say this too strongly, but it's an idea of destruction. Because the laser cuts and checks and binds and scars, whereas light heals. Light embodies the whole thing in its pure light. So of itself it's nothing, and of the light it's nothing, but of each is one. And the light is the healing aspect of all things. And so whatever needs mending, light instantly mends it. Should there be a broken leg, for instance, they would turn this beam of light on the broken leg, and instantly it would return to its original purity and integrity. Many athletes, they have foot injuries that are caused by the running improperly and running on the heel of their foot rather than the ball of their foot, and they create many injuries in their feet, many damages. And this light will immediately return all that to its original purity and its standard. And this light, believe it or not, and I shouldn't say believe it or not, but this light will be aimed into the eyes of any person who chooses, and their eyes will instantly return to their original purity and integrity. Not 20/20, but far beyond that. far beyond it. So you will have the capacity, this sounds almost like a daydream, but you will have the capacity to see the past, the present, and the future. You'll be able to see in things, through things, around things. You'll be able to see all things. Now, we say there is no past, and that is true. There is no past. We say, I view the past and the present as dead. Well, that's true. But you see, when you think of the past in the now, the past indeed is dead, but it is now a living present idea that you're thinking about. And if you're thinking about the future, it too of itself is dead, but when you think about it, you give it life by your thought in the now. Everything is viewed, reviewed, understood in the now. And this is where we are. We are in the now. We are living in the now. Anything other than the now is dead. And by dead, it means never was, never will be. You see, this is what we want to have strong in our consciousness, that the past and future never were, never will be, cannot be, are totally out of the picture. We live only in the now. We live only in the light. Now, have any of you had any of the experiences of what do they call them? Death experiences? Have you ever almost died? And actually, you have, but you don't know it. There are many times in your sleep when you stop breathing, and you could have died at that instant, because if you stayed stopped breathing, you would not have lived. But you were gone. You were actually dead for a moment or several moments. And what took place when your body was dead? When your body was dead, you no longer thought of yourself as separated from your divine inner awareness. You were one as the divine inner awareness. And you had an opportunity to know that oneness as your divine inner awareness. Everyone has this experience, and everyone knows this, but everyone doesn't want to recognize it. Now, what happens when you're one as your divine inner awareness? What happens to you? What happens to your mind? What happens to your thought? What happens to your being? Do you become philanthropic in your thinking? Do you become interested in the welfare of others? Do you become interested in helping the world? Or is there no world to help? You see, this world we live on is a pure illusion. It's a playground for us to see how much we can be confused by it. Now, I gave you the illustration of the TV show. And on the illustration of the TV show, it said to you straight out, this is a joke. It says, this is not true. If you consider this, you are making a big mistake in your thinking, you see? And it says it to you. Well, now, all of Earth, all of human experience says the same thing. It says, don't believe in the human body. The human body is here, but for a temporary moment. It's for you to use however you wish. And our vision is so unfortunate, so limited right now, that we cannot see our ideal spirit, mind, and body, our ideal body, our ideal body. And our ideal body is so much different and beautiful compared to our human body. Our human body was designed to get along on planet Earth so you could move around and do things, but our ideal body can do all those things and a million more. our ideal body flies. Our ideal body swims underwater. It's such for the desire of our ideal body. Our ideal body can manifest for itself by its thought, whatever experience it wants to have. If it feels like riding in a limousine, it can. If Ellen is so hung up with her jacuzzi, she can have it in her car, you know? And she says, oh my gosh. There are people who have this dream, and this is in jokes still that they talk about it. But it's not a joke. It's not a joke. If that is what you want. If that is what you want. Now, Ellen, think of this. If, and we're using this because it is so ludicrous, if you want a jacuzzi in your car, have a jacuzzi in your car with the density and the warmness of water, but have the water be weightless. The water doesn't weigh anything. And the jacuzzi itself is made out of, you might say, titanium, weightless material. Material that is getting close to weightlessness. And you yourself would be weightless. So here you are with this lovely big jacuzzi in your car, and you have someone drive, and you just climb into the jacuzzi and just enjoy soaking it up. It's totally ludicrous, but it's an interesting concept we can all conceive of. And you see, when you look at Harry Potter, and Harry Potter is a big joke, but it's a beautiful joke. When you look at Harry Potter, and you see Harry Potter going to this festival with the other wizards and his friend, they live in a very primitive home, a very nice primitive home, and they went to this festival, and they brought their suitcase along with them. Well, they opened up their suitcase, and their suitcase became a two-story house with three or four bedrooms in it and everything else, and, you know, the bathroom and the sinks and the toilets and everything else that you could ever want, functioning. Now, to what are they attached? That doesn't matter. It goes off into the nothingness, but they needed to have that because they chose to have something which was humanist to live in. Now, if any of the humans would walk by there and see that, would they see it, or maybe they wouldn't? Maybe this would not be for them to see, it's just for the wizards to see. But if the humans saw it, what would happen? They would think it's just a two-story house sitting there in the middle of this park. They would, and then the next day, if they came back and the program was over, everything would be gone. All these houses, all these things. People even had special fences around their houses, and they had fountains in the front lawn, on the front lawn of their house, and they had their animals there. And they, you know, wonderful, imaginative things. But can that be? Of course it can be. Is it? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Why can't you and I see it? Because we don't believe in it. Because we don't believe it's true. And as we were listening to the show the other night, believe. Believe in the fairy tales. Believe in these strange things. For they have more truth in them than truth has in it. They say sometimes that truth is stranger than fiction. That may be. But we don't know all the facts about truth, so therefore we don't know it in comparison to fiction. And we don't need to know it. You see, the more you are illumined by your inner light, and that you do by turning within and listening to the divine within you, the more you are illumined by your inner light, the more you are aware on this level of these games that we're playing. Now, Do you think that there are people doing these things now? Do you think that there are people running around having a great time? Do you think that there are people having experiences like this? They surely are. They surely are. Now, why are they having experiences like this? They're having experiences like this because they believe. They believe in these things, and they bring them forth into their consciousness. Now, do you believe just a little bit? Do you believe these things can be? And you wouldn't be sitting here listening to this crackpot if you didn't believe. Otherwise, you'd just think I'm a crackpot, and you would say, someone really should put him away. But that's not true. That's not true. You see, the beauty of what we're looking at right now, and the beauty of what we're being aware of right now, is we have just killed off all of the dead. How do you kill off the dead? We have taken away their existence. We have taken away their meaning, their purpose, their direction. We have taken, and we have also taken away the unborn, the future. We have taken away the unborn and the future, for all is now. And when we live in this concept of all is now, what happens to us? What happens to us is that we are so illumined. We are so brilliant. Now, they like to say that little children have an insight. They're closer to God because they're not as far removed. Neither are we. But they might remember God better, their divine self. Well, you remember your divine self just as well as any child. In fact, you are a child. You are a child on the infinite program of all life. You don't realize that your life is endless. And though today you may look like you're 25 years old or 40 years old or whatever, tomorrow, when you wake up to who you are, all age will be gone. All years and count will be gone. And all you will know is that you are here. You are an is. You are living in this experience right now here as an is, and it is wonderful. There is nothing that can take anything from you, nothing that can add anything to you. You are the is. And when you're the is, then you express and experience everything that you are. And that's kind of a thrilling experience. Are you ready for such an experience? Are you ready for such an experience of knowing all that you are right now? Are you ready to be aware of the goal that you have set up before you? Oh, you have a goal? You didn't know that, did you? Your goal is to be yourself and have fun. So simple, so beautiful, so wonderful. Now, when Our Lady called up today and said that she had this anxiety experience, and we told her to let go of trying to guide the lives of others, she immediately felt better because she immediately knew whose life she was guiding. Of course, I didn't tell her that's just one of many that you're sticking your nose in, because her work is being a practitioner, a counselor. And we had our friend in Africa, Andrew Aiken, and he retired as a school superintendent, and he was offered a job of being a jurist. That is, working on as the one and only jury, one and only member of the jury, for his particular legal system. And he came to me so proudly saying he has this job and he's been given this wonderful responsibility. He was really chosen because he's an outstanding man. And I said, great. I said, you will always be in conflict, though. Why is that? Because the Bible says, judge not lest ye be judged. For with whatever judgment you judge, you shall be judged. But I say, hey, if that turns you on, go for it. Because there will be jurists, there will be judges, there will be people fulfilling those things, and if you want to do it, you probably make a very positive one. And within a week, he had resigned all of those wonderful gifts that were given to him. But a little aside to that is, he was given the job, and it took many hours every week. And it had no salary. He didn't get paid for doing it. So here he was just giving of his own personal time to do something he didn't agree with and not accomplishing what he really wanted. But the prestige of being that person who judges, wow, you know, wow. And I said, oh, you like that, huh? I said, if you like it, go for it. But just remember, judge not, lest you be judged. So he has quit that and gone on to doing other things, which, hey, I don't care whether he does it or not. If he does these things, or if you do these things or not, look at yourself right now. Are you judging? Are you judging your relatives? Are you seeing them doing foolish things? Are you looking at your relatives? Are you seeing them do foolish things? You bet you are. Are you looking at your relatives and you seeing them do foolish things? Sure. You laugh in your shirt sleeve at how silly they are, you know? And do you laugh at yours? You sure do. You see, we all laugh at others for doing the very thing that we do too. They're doing something silly, but we recognize it because we do the silly thing too. We want to set a new course in motion for ourselves, a new direction in motion for ourselves of living our absolute perfect, fantastic life. And we can live our absolute perfect, fantastic life as we begin to be who we really are and express who we really are. Now, that doesn't come easy. That doesn't come easy. And the reason it doesn't come easy is because there is a light. And that light shines very brightly within each of us. And when we don't move in the right direction, that light shines upon us and says, hey, get going. Shape up. Start going in the direction that's important for you to go. Stop acting foolish. And then you say to yourself, hey, I can be foolish if I want to. And that's true, you can. But the terrible thing is, if you are foolish, and you know you are foolish, then a great deal falls upon you. But if you are foolish and you don't know you're foolish, you are sort of forgiven. Because the law somehow works a pleasantry with babies and idiots, you know. And it's a wonderful thing. But are you ready to take such an opportunity to be a baby or an idiot? Are you ready to do silly things? Are you ready, like the little child who walked upon the flowers? Are you ready? See, we have all these illustrations, and all we have to do is go through the books of hundreds of people. Norman Vincent Peale was a very remarkable man, a minister par excellence, positive thinker without imagination, without comparison. And he had thousands and thousands and thousands of stories in his archives, because he liked to collect them, of miracles, of how people spoke their word and had miracles take place in their life. Now, he does not promote these miracles. I mean, he's gone, but of course, his wife doesn't. His wife could take all those miracles and make a whole book out of them, of how people prayed and their prayer came true, on some pretty hefty stuff too. But why is it that they don't do that? Why is it that a course in miracles will sell, but a book of people's already accomplished miracles doesn't sell? People want to learn how to do it for themselves. People do not want to read about what other people did, how other people performed miracles by using the principle in a perfect way, because they want to have their own. They want to do their own thing. And they want to do their own thing because they feel that that is so tremendously important, whereas it is the least important thing in the world. Miracles, I might say, are a dime a dozen. Miracles happen so frequently and so regularly and so wonderfully in everyone's life, but you don't care. You are absolutely careless about these miracles. Because all of the students of the university here have been chided from time to time and recommended strongly that they keep a book of miracles and every day at least write down one miracle. Every day a miracle? That sounds pretty good, huh? But every day write down at least one miracle. And you know what would happen? They would wake up to the fact that miracles do happen. Miracles are wonderful. Miracles are fantastic. We live in a fantastic world. We live in a fantastic life, filled with magic beyond our imagination, filled with magic coming to us from every possible source, and we don't even know it, because we have not chosen to take a book and write down these miracles every day as they happen. You might start with a miracle that you are alive, and that you get up every morning, and that you are able to breathe, and that you are able to see, and that you are able to walk and talk and move your digits, move your fingers, your hands, your nose, your toes. There are many people in this world who cannot do that. Many. There are many quadriplegics, people who have lost their arms and legs. And you say, what's the use of living? Well, they don't want to die. Why don't they want to die? Be natural to get out of this thing. Because they have found something to live for. And that what they have found to live for is themselves. They enjoy themselves. And they enjoy the quiet time that they have to themselves. And they enjoy having somebody take care of them, you know. They enjoy these things, and it's beautiful. But you have everything. And you can live in that consciousness of everything. You can live in the consciousness that you are enjoying everything. You can live in the consciousness that all is yours right now, if you wish. If you wish. But if you don't wish to do it, that's all right too. The light is there for you. But just remember, when you enter into this light, and this light is pretty persuasive, when you enter into the light, you will not see yourself. You will not see any objects, person, place, or thing. You will not see anything. Because the light will be bright, and you will not be able to see anything, only the light. Why, do you ask, why, you might ask, would anyone ever want to be in such a situation? Why don't people just stay in their homes, close the doors, and live in that inner light? It's interesting. But the reason why people don't do that is because they are looking for fun outward. And they want to go to the amusement park. They want to go to the theater. They want to go to the digital movies. They want to do all these neat things. They want to enjoy them and partake in them. They want to do the outer. What happens when you do the outer? When you do the outer, you lose the inner. Yes. When you become a great writer, you are not an introspective being. You are now a great writer with that responsibility. You don't have the time to be the great inner being that you are. It's interesting, isn't it? I don't know if this illustration will come across, but think about it. Closest to you in the car are empty areas, like the little pocket next to the seat, and the little seat thing in the middle, and the ashtrays and so on. But what's the fullest? The glove compartment usually is pretty full, and the trunk is usually pretty full. Why are they so full? Well, they're full because that's the standard way of doing things. Could you create yourself some sort of gadget that would hold everything for you in the front seat, in the front pocket? Sure. Sure. Consider what you do. I looked in my tool drawer yesterday, and it had a lot of tools in it. A lot of tools. Unnecessary tools. Tools I've never used and will never use, but tools. And as I looked in there, I thought to myself, isn't it interesting? This drawer is filled with tools, making me think I have a lot of tools, and they're tools that I never use because I have no need for them. Okay, so I put these tools in the garage. And one of our people come along, they say, oh, good, tools. I need tools in the truck or in the Windstar or in the Golden Eagle or in the Expedition. I need tools to be in these places. And so then they get a box and they put all these tools in there and they never use them. They never use. We don't need them. A screwdriver and a pair of pliers is always helpful for anything, but you never need it. And when you never need it, you never use it. And when you never use it, it's just wasted space. You see, you have to really be careful in what sort of things you're loading down your mind with. Are you loading down your mind with a lot of senseless information? I think of the magazines that I peruse each month and how many of them have absolutely senseless information. I used to love to read the Smithsonian Institute magazine, and I would read it every month diligently. And then when I'd go on seminars, I'd refer to one or two articles from it. But that was not significant. It was not significant. What benefit am I having putting that information in my mind? Is that illumining me or blessing me in any way? Or is it just making my mind full of a whole bunch of these different ideas and thoughts and stuff like that? What am I doing to myself? What sort of things am I wasting my time with? We must stop and think about that. We have only so many hours in the day to dedicate to fun and being ourselves. And part of that fun and being ourselves is meditating, is introspection, is listening within. And the more time that we can dedicate happily and enthusiastically to listening within and dedicating ourselves to finding who we are, we will not be reading Saturday Evening Post and Popular Mechanics and National Geographic. We will not be reading magazines of various kinds because that just is a time consumer. And what information does it leave me with? I mentioned several things to you about doctors using light and so forth. But you know, if you really are in tune, that information will be revealed to you to use as you're giving your talks, as you're sharing your ideas. That information will just be natural for you. But if you're not harmonious with yourself, if you're not in tune with yourself, then you will never do that. And that is very important, that you do it. We live in a very special world, and the resurrection is the illumination of our inner being. And I view the past and present as dead. The allness can only know the present. The dead is not to have lived, and not to have existed. What came from Mother as she left her body behind? Her ectoplasm, whatever name we want to give it, her spirit, her soul, her life force. It came from her because it was not attached to the body. But it stayed with the body as long as the body wanted to pretend it was alive. But many times our bodies give up months, years, centuries before we give up. And if we can start paying attention to that inner light, that light which is our divinity, we will live a dynamic, forceful, powerful life. That's what the resurrection teaches us, to live a dynamic, forceful, powerful life. But when we come to our next portion, resurrection, I view the now as eternity, we're going to be talking about some of the wonderful gifts that we have in viewing the now as eternity. So, have a lovely pause and think beautiful thoughts and know that I love you very, very much.
I love you.